Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios. Presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. This is Chicago's number one and most listened to sports station. 670 The Score is Chicago Sports. Chicago Sports is The Score. An Odyssey station. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago.
The Score!
Okay. Yes. Well, you almost need sunscreen for this Christmas. Welcome and welcome back. Steve Rosenblum, Mark Rohde. We're in for Mully and Haw today. Christmas Eve day. We're broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. Text us, call us, 312-644-6767. Saturday suckage on Friday. Saturday suckage whenever requires a suckage roll call. Don Cooper.
If I think something sucks, I'll tell you it sucks.
Grobber.
It sucks and it freebases.
Mike Tomlin.
Sucking.
Jake Arrieta.
This sucks. Really, it does.
Brian Cashman.
I also know that we suck right now.
Albert Almora.
Damn, Willie, man. Like, do we suck?
Pat Fitzgerald.
Sometimes you got to embrace the suck.
Eloy Jimenez.
Oh, my God, this sucks.
Really? It sounded a lot like Toby there, Sean.
Hey, you guys not going to make anyway. You guys are suck. And when I got traded the next day, oh, welcome to the suck team.
Random Bears fan. Mark Rohde.
Hey, I'm here and I'm happy and everything is great.
Bruce Levine. How about Bruce Levine? Should we do that?
Bruce.
We're taking a roll. Are you here, Bruce?
You know, guys, I've never had such a sucky intro in my entire career. So this sucks.
Yes. Welcome to it. Bruce is brought to you on the Circa Resort Casino in Las Vegas hotline, home of the world's largest sports book. Bruce, the Cubs and Carlos Correa. So the story that you first broke, you first enumerated or listed and wrote on Tuesday, start there and then catch our audience up to where we are now.
The Cubs had numerous and great interest in Carlos Correa before December 1st when the baseball lockout came and all baseball things were halted. There is also interest by Correa, and why wouldn't he want to come to the greatest sports city, greatest baseball city in the world, Chicago, Illinois? The assumption here is that Carlos Correa would like the same contract or more than Corey Seager signed for 10 years, $325 million. The Chicago Cubs have a lot of money, and they're not afraid to say that they have a lot of money to offer and to spend in 2022, 23, 24, 25, keep going. And Carlos Correa would be the subject as soon as a lockout strike ends, because he is a difference maker on the field. He is a difference maker in the locker room. He would be a difference maker in postseason. And he's a difference maker in sales and marketing as well for the Chicago Cubs.
And that is what was great to hear about everything you just said, Bruce, was that the Cubs have the money and they're not afraid to spend it. And whether or not the Cubs get Carlos Correa, we don't know. But my question is this. How far are they willing to spread that money? Is this one or two players, or could the Cubs put together a really good team this year if, as you said, they have the money and they're not afraid to spend it?
So their payroll after the trade last year for all the superstars moving out of town dropped in half. They were 15th in baseball after the previous 5 years being in the top five. And they have $99 million committed for 2022. Stroman, Hayward, Hendricks, Contreras, Miley, Gomes, Happ, and Bodie are the only guys making over the minimum. So that is 3, 6, 7, 8 players. The payroll is going to be somewhere, even if it's at $160 million, which would be probably somewhere in the bottom of the top third in baseball, they still have $60 or $70 million to spend for 22. So this, they can easily give Stroman a 7-year, $224 million contract, which would give him an AAV of $32 million a year by uploading it to the top and paying him the most money in baseball in 2021 and 2022 and 2023 by surpassing Mike Trout and giving him $37 million a year in the first year and the second year, averaging the rest out at $30 million a year and giving him the ability to walk out after the first 2 years.
We're talking with Bruce Levine, baseball insider here, co-host with David Haw of Inside the Clubhouse. Can you clarify, see, what your statement that the Cubs are going to try to convince him to take a 7-year deal and and 10 seems to be the standard?
Yeah.
This sounds like a really, I don't know clarify where the money is, because this sounds like the White Sox botching the Manny Machado negotiations because has the leverage.
Yeah, Steve, how many 10-year contracts in your memory have worked out?
I'm not saying they won't work out, but if you don't have the leverage to get a 7-year contract, the player has the leverage.
The leverage is in the best city in the world and the money that they have to spend. So the first 2 years, the way that I structured it, okay, if he gets $37 million in 2022 and 23, right? He's the highest paid position player in baseball, only trailing Scherzer for a total payroll salary for those years, okay? If you give him the ability to walk at age 29 after those 2 years, he's still in a situation or has the ability to sign another 7, 8, or 10-year contract for that much or more somewhere else. Or if he's not all that good and he's still, you know, just average Carlos Correa, he still has $30 million a year for 5 more years to get paid. It's a win-win for everybody involved.
Well, I look at it as a situation where the Cubs refused to spend money last year, couldn't wait to offload salaries. They ended their season a year ago, December, when they traded Darvish. And I don't know that this is necessarily the right approach unless it's upfront money that Correa wants. Whatever he wants, somebody's going to give it to him. The Cubs might want to do it their way, the way the White Sox wanted to do it their way with Machado, And it doesn't work out when the player has the leverage. So that's what
he might have the leverage, but tell me how many teams can afford to give him $350 million.
All you need is one more.
I agree. I'm just asking you to tell me which one that'll be.
I don't know. Yankees, they always have money. The Red Sox, they always
Yankees,
have money.
Yankees, Mets, Angels.
Well, guess what? If the Cubs want to do it, they have the money, okay?
Yeah.
So if you're saying they don't want to spend the money, I get it. I understand that you don't think they want to spend $350 million for 10 years on a player. I personally would like to be able to protect myself and my franchise and still get the best player for now, and I think they can do it.
I think, you know, Steve mentioned the Yu Darvish thing from last year, and he just mentioned that that's where their season ended. So that's where most of my interest still goes right now, and the starting staff. Marcus Stroman was a nice signing for sure. You still have a solid, close to number one, maybe the number one, Kyle Hendricks on your staff, the signing of Wade Miley. Beyond that, for my money, that's about it. So, Bruce, is it possible that the Cubs make another splash to solidify their pitching staff? Because that is where they went wrong last year.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, I think, give me a reason why you signed Marcus Stroman for $25 million a year for the next 3 years, unless you feel as an organization, as an entity trying to entertain and keep your fan base interested, why you wouldn't keep taking it a step further. Is Marcus Stroman going to satisfy you? A lot of people want to compare this to Edwin Jackson, okay, and their original rebuild back in 2012 and how they threw 4 years and $44 million at Edwin Jackson.
I understand that. I get
Marcus
that
Stroman is a much better pitcher than Edwin Jackson was, and I don't think you spend that kind of money unless the goal is to continue to spend and continue to go after, as you say, more pitching, continue to build more young pitching in your organization, and try to be the team that you were going forward in 2014, 15, 16, 17 once again. So again, was there a collective failure by the Chicago Cubs to build a farm system that could sustain and fortify this team beyond 2016 and 17? No, it just wasn't there. So throwing money at situations, that's not always the way to do it. In this situation, you're talking about a 27-year-old player who is one of the more accomplished playoff players in history, after already playing in 79 playoff games by age 27. So you're taking a risk on any player for 7 to 10 years, especially a guy who has a bad back and has had problems staying on the field except for 2020 in the truncated season and last year where he played 148 out of the 162. But you also have to send a message out to the rest of baseball, including the players, that we are the Chicago Cubs. We are going to try to win every year, and we need to let everybody know we're going to go after the best players.
Yeah, Bruce, I think that I got no problem in this case this year if the Cubs are to, you know, as you put it, throw money at the problems because of how disastrous in sports lexicon, how disastrous things were last year with trading out the core with two double-digit losing streaks last year. It was an awful, embarrassing year. So the message has to be sent not just to the players but to the fan base as well, that if the Cubs want to keep being that business that they have been since, you know, Jed Hoyer and Theo Epstein took over, that this is a new way of doing business. They can't have seasons like they had last year. So I'm good with throwing money at issues and telling the fans that, yes, we are back open for business.
Marcus Stroman is again recruiting Carlos Correa. I don't know what the depth of their relationship is. I don't know where it comes from. Can you give us a sense, Bruce?
No, I don't. I mean, other than being a fellow Major League Baseball players, I do not know the depth of their. But it's a really good thing in sports now. I think fans love it. Mm-hmm. I think people in general love the idea of guys saying, okay, dudes, you signed me to this huge contract. I'm coming to your town, but you better bring some other people along because the goal is to win, not for me just to show up and pitch by myself or with one or two other guys of major league caliber. And I think it's fascinating in this time that that players, you know, have that voice and are not afraid to say, let's keep doing more. And they have the hammer. Marcus Stroman has the hammer, right, for the next 3 years with the Cubs at mm-hmm. the very least. He can, like the creativity I talked about in the contract for Correa, Stroman has that same ability. He can walk after 2 years, okay? And if he doesn't like what he's seeing here after making $50 million for 2 years, he's on his way to somewhere else at 32. So, you know, those are the creativity of these contracts and the ability for them to get super rich after a couple of years and then still be able to pick another place where they want to go and try to compete and win. I think it's fantastic. It's not great for owners, but I think it's great for the fans and for the sport.
Hey, Bruce, what about some of these guys that performed out of their minds last year on the Cubs, like Patrick Wisdom and Frank Schwindel? Do guys like that have a place on this team this year?
Oh, yeah, they're starting players right now. Okay, so are they going to repeat what they were able to do last year? Is Schwindel going to be the, you know, like he was one of the top players in the National League 2 months in a row, where teams couldn't even figure out how to pitch the guy because if you threw it outside or you threw breaking balls, he's going to hit it to right field. Threw it inside, he would hit it out of the ballpark to left. I thought it was tremendously entertaining, if anyone was paying attention, and not everybody was, to watch, you know, career minor league guys at age 29 and 30 be able to compete at the major league level. You know, other people would say, well, the Cubs were not in contention. They weren't being taken seriously by the opponents. It'll be a different outcome this year. It's going to be interesting to watch to see if that's true or not. I thought it was a great story, and I think it was embraced by Cub fandom who were tired of the narrative about will we be able to sign Rizzo, Baez, and Bryant over the last 3 years.
Yes. I like that, and I am with you on Correa trying to lobbying, recruiting. I like that. And given the fact they're not playing baseball and there's a lockout, anything that smacks of somebody wanting to be on a team with another guy looks good to me. That'll have to replace it for now. Bruce, thanks for your time. We appreciate it.
Guys, before we go, I just want to send out a condolence to Billy Williams on the loss of his wife, Shirley, who had a struggle for the last 10 years, and also to our good friend Jeff Dickerson and his son Parker. I hope they are doing as well as possible. And happy holidays to you guys and to all our great listeners and people at the station. Take care, guys.
You too.
Yeah, thanks, Bruce. And yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. About Billy Williams's wife and our colleague Jeff Dickerson from ESPN. He is in an absolute battle right now. So I send out my prayers to Jeff and to his family and to everybody in his closest circle right now. And who knows, maybe Jeff is crazy enough to be listening to this sports radio station right now. So God bless you, Jeff, and your family.
It is. JD, we're with you. We're with you. We take a break. Rosenblum and Grody, we are in for Mully and Haw. Second half of the hour, we will talk with Jay Hilgenberg. We'll talk offensive line with an offensive lineman from your sole Super Bowl champion Bears. But before that, look who got a Hall of Fame vote. We got to talk about this, and we will after this. Steve Rosenblum, Mark Grody, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Got a fastball and lifts a fly ball into short left field. Pierzynski wanting to know, am I going? He is going. Here comes a throw by Merton. It is a collision at the plate. And Pierzynski not only bangs into Barrett, bangs onto the plate, and here they go. Posednik getting into it with Barrett. And now both dugouts empty.
Barrett punched Pierzynski right in the grill.
You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch. You really are a heel.
That's really good timing, the Grinch, with A.J. Pierzynski. Welcome in, welcome back. Late, great Ed Farmer. Pierzynski punched him, Barrett punched him right in the grill.
Right in the grill!
Right in the grill! And against all odds, A.J. Pierzynski got a Hall of Fame vote.
Wow.
I thought that was remarkable. And that's why we played that. I wanted to come back with it. The vote came from T.R. Sullivan, who covered the Texas Rangers for 32 years and listed his ballot the way everyone who reveals it does. Everybody writes about what they, here's who I voted for and here's why. And number 10 on his ballot, the only vote revealed so far for A.J. Pierzynski, T.R. Sullivan says, until I actually saw his name on the ballot, I never, ever even once thought about A.J. Pierzynski as a Hall of Famer. Never. And I never heard or read anything from another writer about Pierzynski being a Hall of Famer. White Sox manager Ozzie Guillen once said, if you play against him, you hate him. If you play with him, you hate him a little less. The DFW, Dallas-Fort Worth beat writers, dislike Pierzynski so much, we voted him the winner of the Harold McKinney Good Guy Award in 2013 in his only year with the Rangers. I might have had something to do with that.
So this whole thing's a sham, is what
well,
you're saying.
No, because he makes a really good point that I can't say I was aware of as much as I like Pierzynski. T.R. Sullivan says Pierzynski was Yadier Molina's equal as an offensive player. Molina was far better defensively, which is why he will one day go into the Hall of Fame. This figures to be one and done for Pierzynski, even if he was one of the best catchers of his generation. However, that he was right there alone ought to merit at least some Hall of Fame consideration. There was something else. Pierzynski was a fierce competitor, and he could also be a bit devious. He was a smart player and a stand-up guy in the clubhouse. There is just something strangely irresistible about that combination, so I voted for him. And that's A.J. Pierzynski's Hall of Fame vote.
Man, now we're just throwing stuff. We're making up our own rules here.
Well, they always do. They let you.
I know.
Some guy just sent in again the annual blank ballot. That's one of the voters sent that in. Ace of Spader, not Mr. Tibbs tracks it, and you can see that at the that there'll be blank ballots sent in, and then there handicaps the chances of these players getting in. It's not every ballot; it's just those who choose to reveal it, and he keeps score. But if you look at Yadier Molina's, if you look at his career stats compared to A.J. Pierzynski, and you look at on base and slugging, A.J.'s got a better slugging percentage. He's got a better OPS, and he's right there with Yadier Molina, who is revered. He's a god, right? Well, defensively, he's better than A.J. Pierzynski, but you're talking about offensively, A.J. Pierzynski was, I don't know, underrated, maybe not rated at all, maybe not even considered in that kind of situation, but he was right there with Yadier Molina, who is deified in St. Louis.
Yeah. And you can't just discount that defensive part. I mean, that does often make the difference between Hall of Fame and not Hall of Fame.
Because you probably catcher.
I mean, you can go through and find lots of catchers that have probably been, you know, decent offensively and were not as good defensively. AJ got better as his career went on. You know, early in his career, he was criticized for being one of those catchers who was more concerned about his own statistics and calling certain pitches when a runner was on first base and trying to steal and make life a little bit more convenient from him. And he had a rough ride in San Francisco. Who knows what is true and what is not about how he handled his pitching staff, I think, in his one glorious year there. And obviously he had a nice run in Minnesota and a really good run. So that's the thing about AJ Pierzynski. He's a guy that got better as his career went on. I mean, like I said, really good in Minnesota, annoyed the hell out of Sox fans while he was a Twin. But then he seemed to mature as a player and maybe even as a person when he was with the White Sox and kind of accepted his role as defense first or handling your pitching staff first, and then you could think about your offense. And obviously the offense was clutch. It was the word that I would use for AJ Pierzynski. Bit devious, that is perfect for him. As far as leadership is concerned, I don't know if that's befitting of AJ Pierzynski or not in terms of the clubhouse. I mean, I guess maybe from a media perspective, the word that I would use is he could be snotty with the media at times in covering him, but and some players were turned off by him, some players liked him. So I don't know if he was wholly a galvanizer or a leader like Yadier Molina is and was, and obviously Molina's got the defensive package too. Interesting nonetheless, though, that he would give a vote to AJ Pierzynski.
Right, made up, but you give him. I give T.R. Sullivan props for the honesty, right? Isn't that what we want?
Sure.
Why did you vote for him? What do you?
Yeah.
You're making up your own rules. Okay, here are the rules. Here's why. He's devious. I mean, he was part of a group that we hate this guy so much, we're going to give him a good guy award.
Right,
so he
has to
get up there and speak. I mean, I love that. And Speaking of, at this time of year, we have a couple notes before we get to take a break to bring in Jay Hilgenberg. Heidi Stevens, who used to write for the Tribune, writes for Tribune Content Services now and writes a column, had tweeted this out with a comment, "The level of honesty I've come to respect in a holiday card." So maybe I'll get a holiday card from Spilkus. Maybe I won't, like you got, Mark. I don't know.
That's right.
And I don't know what to be written in it. But this was what was written in the card that at this time of year, that Heidi Stevens received. "It was great seeing you." Bang. That means exclamation point.
Yeah.
"Hope to see you again soon." Bang. "Say hi to your family and maybe send me some pictures. I can't even remember your husband or children's names. Love, so-and-so." That's the unvarnished honesty in that is terrific.
That is awesome.
Yeah. And for you last-minute shoppers out in L.A., you last-minute wake-and-bake club members in L.A., and I know we have you out there, and you'd be waking up now.
Diva.
Yeah. Well, she was responsible for the ugly Hanukkah sweater I'm wearing.
Oh, really?
This ugly Hanukkah sweater that I featured on my walking Twitter video, just trying to follow in the footsteps of Mark Grody, was part of, it was like the one that Seth Rogen wore. Speaking of Wake and Bakers, Seth Rogen wore it in the movie The Night Before with Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Really?
And he went into his Jewish drawer to get it. And this sweater was part of the swag bag, and the diva was on the junket. So they gave everybody got a swag bag, and this was the ugly Hanukkah sweater.
Oh, that's incredible. Do you have a Jewish drawer, by the way?
I got a whole closet. It's a whole Jewish.
You got a whole house full of Jewness, don't
right.
you?
I do, yeah, sure. Yeah, everywhere you look. But for those of you in L.A., where the diva is, and if you're waking and baking, do you know that Allen Iverson has his own line of pot?
Did not know that.
He has strains with Al Harrington, the Viola company that Al Harrington started, named after his mom.
Yeah.
Allen Iverson, it's only available in California, and it has a flavor of Dom Perignon.
Doesn't Allen Iverson strike you as somebody who is desperate to make money?
He may need it. I don't know. I don't.
I see him doing like the gambling commercials,
yeah,
and like just doing anything.
So
like, I don't know. I just have that weird feeling that
is that the
just,
bar? Is that the barometer for you? The gambling commercials.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know. He's really playing on vices, isn't he? You know, like gambling, the pot. So I don't know what's next. Don Perignon. There you go.
Yeah, it's like Dom.
Dom Perignon.
Yeah. So there's only a couple. It's only available in California for all of our Southern California or all of our West Coast Wake and Bakers. But I just thought, okay, Iverson has the answer to your. To your pain. And this was a guy he had a history with cannabis, because he was a year after he was drafted to play for the Sixers, he was arrested and charged with misdemeanor possession in Virginia. And, you know, now he's trying to sell an ounce.
Isn't it amazing how silly misdemeanor marijuana sounds now that it's been legalized in our state?
Yeah. Yeah. That's it. So we'll take a break and we will talk some Bears football with a legendary Bears offensive lineman and someone that Mark's on every pregame show anyways. So Mark's on a pregame show with Jay Hilgenberg.
I am.
And we will talk offensive line and Jermaine Ifedi, and should he have smacked and pushed and yelled at Tevin Jenkins? Should Tevin Jenkins have done what he did? I don't know. We'll find out what Jay Hilgenberg thanks. Steve Rosenblum and Mark Rohde, we are in for Mully and Haw. Thanks for listening. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
I thought, you know, I think it's just tough love. You know, he's a good kid. We're a close-knit group. So we can hold each other accountable. You know, people can say what they want about I looked and he pushed him. You know, we're big boys. We're big boys. We're asked to do a lot, and we're all grown men in this at least in our room. So nobody's feelings was hurt. We're all men, and we're all accountable to everything. Just like they all hold me accountable to do my job and not hurt the team. We all hold each other accountable, and nobody's above that. Nobody's below that, and that's the good part of our room, and I think that's why we've had some good moments of success this year.
Rocking around the Christmas tree at the Christmas party hop.
Welcome in, welcome back. Steve Rosenblum and Mark Rohde with you. We're in for Mully and Haw this morning. Christmas Eve day, Saturday suckage on Friday, just to throw everybody off. But we suck, so your Christmas day doesn't have to. Coming into the segment, we heard Jermaine Ifedi talking about Tevin Jenkins and talking about his tough love to Tevin Jenkins. So, Mark, when you heard Jermaine Ifedi talk about what was going on, what did you think when you saw it, and what did you think of his explanation?
I was pretty surprised when I saw it. I mean, it's always kind of jarring, I'll use that word again, when you see a player out on the field being physical with a teammate, and it wasn't like in a attacking way. It was a get your ass in line, get your butt back in the huddle. This is a bunch of nonsense. So I was a little bit surprised by it in real time, actually watching that go down on the sidelines and getting the close-up view. But I will say this, from having heard Jermaine Ifedi yesterday and from actually getting a chance to talk to him one-on-one for the pregame show, it sounds like all is okay and that Tevin Jenkins wasn't turned off by it, and it's a tough love moment, and they're in their own offensive line world, and they took care of things in-house.
And I think Justin Fields had the right approach. I think he had the right thought is, we need more of that. I was glad to see that. But, bro, do it between whistles.
Yeah, well, and here's the part where I am on Team Tevin Jenkins, because I have to imagine that as a rookie, playing in his second game, it's kind of an involuntary response for a while. When you see a teammate of yours, let alone the quarterback, the guy who's your job, your life depends on protecting that guy, the guy that wears number one for the Bears. If you don't protect that guy and stick up for that guy, you're never going to make it on this team or anywhere in the NFL. So I think that I can't imagine that right away in your career you could just have that taken out of your system. It's like truly a learning moment for Tevin Jenkins in that case.
Well, let's find out what an actual offensive lineman thinks. We'll go to the Circa Resort Casino in Las Vegas, our guest hotline, Circa Resort Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book, and we welcome back to the show Jay Hilgenberg. Jay Hilgenberg, a member of the legendary 1985 Bears offensive line. Actually, for 5 years, they owned the line of scrimmage, people. That was them. They controlled the ball. They led the league in time of possession. They were going to run, and you knew it, and they knew it, and there's nothing you could do about it. And they protected their quarterback as best they could, give or take a Charles Martin. Jay, thanks for coming on the show. And we were talking about Jermaine Ifedi and Tevin Jenkins, and Justin Fields said, I like what you did. I just want you to do it between the whistles. And then some people are lauding him. We need that. We need the fire and the passion. When you saw what Tevin Jenkins did, and then you saw Jermaine Ifedi and perhaps heard what he had to say, give us, sum up your thoughts on that incident.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question. You see your quarterback get hit, back in the day, you talked about our line, we would have had five guys attacking that guy. We would have gotten after him, no question about it. So, I don't know, you got to be somehow, you just got to be a little smarter. You don't throw a punch, just go run into the guy hard and push him or something to let him know that you got to show some defense for it. And Jermaine Ifedi, I think that kind of disturbed me a little more, how he kind of really pushed Tevin there and kind of got after him. It was like he was scolding him on the field. I didn't like that because you don't want to show up an offense. You're a fellow player ever on the field. I mean, he's not a coach out there. I get it. He's a veteran and he's doing what he feels like was right. But it's not up to him. I at the end of it, I liked it was proper. I liked it was a frustrating game. It's been a frustrating season. Tevin is just getting his footings in the NFL, and I think it's good to show a little toughness. You know, it's not the first 15 yarder this team has had this year. So what the heck?
That is true, my friend. There's no doubt about that. And here's the other part, Jay, after they drafted Tevin Jenkins, they were hitting us over the head. And when I say us, I mean the media, with how the nasty streak that Tevin Jenkins has. And, oh, this guy's mean out on the field, which is good, which you like hearing. That's a quality you want in an offensive lineman. But then don't be surprised that when in his second game, when he's still working through everything, he shows a little nastiness out on the field, right?
Right. You don't want to take that out of him. You just don't want to take it out of him. But you can't make it so blatant. You know, Dicka used to tell us, you know, get the guy back, but get him legally. You know, get him legally during the game. Make sure you get him, though. But
how did you get him legally? What's a legal way to get him? Does legal mean just so the officials don't see it?
Well, I don't know. In a block, you know, block the guy, you know, down and just finish him onto the ground. You know, if he's standing around a pile, take a shot at a guy. You know, you have to defend your guy. You have to defend your quarterback. I like the aggressive play. It's been a tough year, you know. So Tevin has shown something. It has, especially for Tevin, that they. Yeah, I agree with what you guys are saying. I mean, he has a lot to prove here in a short time. So he's trying to take advantage of it. Unfortunately, you know, he's been making a lot of penalties, but that's going to happen. That's going to happen also, right, getting thrown in there like he has. But he's shown a lot of promising play. So I anticipate that he'll keep being out there. I think it's good that he plays the rest of these games this year.
So he looks right to you as an offensive lineman, just like from a technique standpoint. Forget all the extracurricular stuff. When you watch him out there, does he look like he has the right stuff to be a long-time offensive lineman in this league?
Yeah, I you know, there's nothing that's really jumping out at me that shows that he isn't. You know, the jumping off sides and the motion penalties, that's just he's thinking too much about he's having to – you know, think too much about the plays. There's too much to consume all for him right now. There's a lot going on in that head. You know, that snap count's a hard thing to remember at times. I mean, I'm telling you, by the time you're in that huddle and you run up that line of scrimmage, I bet about 60-70% of the time you forget what the snap count is on, and you got to ask someone when you're up there.
You're like, hey, Thayer, what was the snap count? I'm sure Thayer took care of you, right?
Oh, we had a whole coding system that we'd ask what was it on.
Really?
That's awesome. It went through so many different phases. Finally, we had to go with like Indian names with A, B, or C. So you definitely. I've had one time Harbaugh was a quarterback, and the nose guard was a 4th-and-1. The nose guard yelled, "What's it on?" And Harbaugh goes, "Monday." And he told him what it was on. I turned around and looked at him and go, "Come on, Jeff."
That's great.
That sounds like something Randall McDaniel might do or it's one of the Vikings.
Randall.
John Randall.
Yeah.
That was something.
John Randall. Yeah.
Or Keith Millard, one of those guys.
He would ask. That's great.
I tell you, Keith Millard, he was a great player. The anticipation of the snap count, there wasn't anybody better than that.
John Randall, he
was a character.
I'll just say, like, man, from being a kid watching those 80s teams, Minnesota was the only team that scared me in that division back then. They were the only team that gave you guys competition, I thought.
Yes. Well, they had a very strong defensive line. They had good their offensive line was good also, but they had strong defensive line. They were very good. Chris Dolman, the Hall of Famer. He was a great one. Keith Millard should be in the Hall of Fame. He was an amazing player. Yeah. Right. They were all good. I mean, really good team. And then playing up in that dome was not an easy task at times.
Ugh, the roller dome. Yep.
Our guest is Jay Hilgenberg of the Bears pregame show, postgame show, halftime show on our brother station WBBM 780 AM, 105.9 FM with Jim Schwantz and the inevitable Ron Gleason. Jay, I got a question for you. You've watched Justin Fields absorb what he's absorbed that resulted in Tevin Jenkins' response to that. Is Justin Fields subject to official hazing? Does he not get the same protection because he's a rookie?
You'd like to think not, but I tell you, you look at it, and you got to kind of start thinking that way, that he has been. I mean, the thing that jumps out at me when you're saying that is that Steelers game. You know, some of the flags that were not thrown at him in that game. So you got to think, you know, Aaron Rodgers, I'm sure he gets some flags thrown. So yeah, it's unfortunate. But you know, Justin's he's trying to make plays and run. So he's a little different. Maybe the referee's got to kind of learn his game a little bit and see what it's about. But you know, he's had a couple ugly collisions out there. Early in the game this past week, where he kind of went down on his knees and got twisted around, he was going to the north end, and then the time I think Sam snapped the ball early there, kind of jumped the snap count on, and it came to him, and he downed his knee, and the guy picked him up and slammed him also, but they called that one, so that was good. But Yeah, I think sometimes a rookie quarterback's got to kind of earn it a little bit more. I think the refs kind of check them out and see what they're about. But it's unfortunate.
Hey, Jay, what's the most important thing player-wise in your mind that Justin Fields still needs around him that he doesn't necessarily have right now?
You know, I think what really would help him is just the I'm kind of an old school, you know, football guy. I believe in running the football and play action passing. And, you know, I don't know if the being out in the spread of formation out of the shotgun is the best thing for him constantly. I just think if they, you know, David Montgomery and Khalil have been great running backs so far this year that I think you could really just pound the ball with those guys and you know, consume the clock. And so I think just a lot of, you know, play action. I don't think you need to I'm always a big believer. I mean, you got to do whatever you can to protect the passer. I mean, if you can do it as five-man protection, that's great. But you watch that game last night, you know, Tennessee, they were going 6-7-man protection out there on the field, and they're making the play action work. So I'm kind of a believer in that.
Well, pass it along to those people up at Hallis Hall who won't leave the rookie left tackle, who was a right tackle, on his own to protect the quarterback with cracked ribs. I don't know. I don't think five-man protection works in that way. Jay, thanks for your time. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
Have a good holiday.
Bye, Jay.
Jay Hilgenberg of the WBBM 780 AM 105.9 FM pregame, postgame, halftime show, and yet another one of the co-Mark Grody co-partner, co-host with Mark Grody. Partners all over the place.
Yep. Hey, I got to tell you, man, I'm blessed to be working in that Bears radio booth with two 1985 Bears and Thayer and Hilgenberg and then Jim Schwantz, a standout special teams player and linebacker for the Bears. And then, hello, sir, Ron Gleason, you're fired. Goodbye.
So Schwantz has got a Super Bowl ring, and Thayer and Hilgenberg
with
do.
Dallas.
Do you guys compare your World Series ring with their Super Bowl rings?
Yeah, you know, I've never thought about that. I think it's time that I bring the shine up to the WBBM Bears radio booth and be like, hey, how many diamonds are in your ring?
There you go. That's it. That's it. Time to bring the shine. You know what it's time for? It's time for What Mark Heard, our near award-winning segment. We'll take a break. When we come back, it will be What Mark Heard. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly what people outside of Cleveland think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.